Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome not just a very, very old friend, but a friend and his son from Israel, Dr. Amir Kafir and Gil Kafir. Gil and Amir, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be here with you once again.
Thank you.
Thank you for making this happen.
Thank you. I'll introduce Amir first. Amir is the owner and chief executive officer of A-Mirror Group Organizational Development. He's a co-founder and board member of Million Peacemakers, and he's an organizational consultant and management change leader. Gil, on the other hand, is a young, very bright individual who has specialized or studied psychology and business. He's been certified as a non-conflict peacemaker, and he specializes in rebirthing. So, Gil, I've already introduced Amir earlier as well in my earlier show. Tell me quickly about your own background and what got you interested in non-conflict.
So, I always say that I've been working with my father since I was 12, but I just started to get paid for this job for the last 2 years.
Good for you.
That was some kind of a child labor that was there. But when I was around 12, it was the first time that my father hosted a retreat for YPO in Israel around conflict between parent and child. And I was there on the stage helping, modeling how a child and a parent are having a tough conversation and sharing different perspective. And I think that was the first stage in which that attitude or that perspective towards conflict resolution was kind of implemented into me and became a very intuitive nature. So when I just learned it officially a few years ago, felt like that was just the language that I used. It was felt very, very aligned. And even when I went to study psychology and business, it was not with the intention to go into that business and join my father. It came out of pure curiosity. And eventually I found myself that this is the world that I want to operate in.
Actually, he stood on the stage and said, "Dad, sometimes I wish you were a taxi driver so you would be home in the evening."
Well, you'll be surprised at the number of conflicts taxi drivers get into, you know. you could have had, Gil sorting out a lot of your conflicts with them, but... But coming back again, what inspired both of you to focus on conflict resolution?
I want to say that my perspective, it comes back to my my home. It's fun. Just yesterday, my sister had her birthday. But when I was a little kid, I can say that there was a constant conflict around my home between my mother and my sister. And it was something that was very present, a lot of anger. And a lot of friction, and I often felt like sad of being in that position, but just lately discovered how much power it gave me and how a beautiful gift it was that put me in this space. And that was what pushed me to understand about basically how I was born to this type of purposeful action work, and to bring more families and more groups into alignment, into harmony. I saw the pain in it, like, from very, very close.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for sharing this, Gil. And I often say that, you know, there's such a freshness in responses of young people like yourself, and there's so much honesty and transparency. Thank you so much. So my next question is, what challenges do you commonly encounter in facilitating peace dialogues between diverse groups? And I'm fully aware that you people are currently sitting in a country which is in the middle of some of the most incredible conflict the world has seen.
I was preparing to do a session a few weeks ago in Rwanda for a YPO Impact conference. And as I was preparing for this, I was sitting with Gil and we were talking about what to do. He says, "Dad, you know, there's an elephant in the room." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "You're the elephant." And in Rwanda, the conflict that talks about genocide and what's happening now in Israel raises brows for people about what's going on here. So you ask about what we encounter in these situations, I think first and foremost is the inability to truly listen to the other side.
Right.
Each side sees themselves as a victim of the situation, and the other side is a perpetrator who started the whole thing. And it takes quite some time for them to be able to truly listen to the other person's perspective. Mm-hmm. The natural tendency is immediately to respond, immediately to tell you my point of view on what you're saying, right, dismissing what you say. And so the biggest challenge in these groups was twofold. One is to be able to truly listen fully to the other side and let them know clearly that you've heard them with empathy.
Mm.
And that's the second component. The real ability to stop and to be in the other person's shoes that is largely manifested through the tone of voice that you use shows that you really understand their pain. What does it feel to be where they're sitting?
Yeah. I want to add a point to that, that what I often see is how people's perspective is narrow. And so the Buddha was speaking about that attachment is the source of all suffering.
Yep.
And what I see in those events is how people get so strongly and deeply attached to their perspective and lose their ability to see reality in more than one way.
Hmm.
That's all always there. Yeah.
Fascinating. And my next question is that, you know, whenever it comes to conflict, there is an element of trust. So my question is, how can the power of mutual trust and respect be harnessed to navigate conflicts within a team or an organization?
Right. So my dear teacher, Dr. Ichak Adizes, who wrote quite a bit about mutual trust and respect and argues that that is the foundation often of the success or the absence of failure, says that respect is the ability to fully listen to the other side.
Right.
And manifested by eye contact, actually, which means that when you talk, I look at you because I want to learn something from you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about your different way of thinking. We say that if two people think the same thing, one of them is unnecessary,
mm-hmm.
which means that there is growth and movement from differences of points of view. So that is respect.
Mm-hmm.
So as we start to get curious, we start getting interested in really hearing the other point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Trust means that once we shake hands, I can turn my back to you.
Mm.
And often in conflict situation, the underlining issue is lack of trust.
Mm.
Either we have different interests or merely you want, you know, my well-being is exactly the opposite of your well-being, right? And when we had the Israeli-Arab conflict discussion years back in 2002, mutual trust and respect were at the center of it. And trust means that we don't trust your intention. We don't trust your leaders. We don't believe that your leaders can really deliver the goods because of the political pressures of the environment in which they live.
Hmm.
And that is seriously something hard to make a move on and requires what our friend Bobby Sager says, small baby steps.
Very well said. And, you know, your work involves leading groups towards deeper intimacy. How does this aspect contribute to conflict resolution? And what role does self-awareness play in the process?
I think that most of the times we see in groups how the ability to be in the other's side, in the other perspective, and to deeply listen and to understand their perspective, it's a deep place to be. It requires one to be able to fully open up and to be able to really share his perspective and to create intimacy around that. And I'm thinking about how to be able to understand deeply the other side's thoughts, emotions, point of view. You really first and foremost need to understand your own thoughts and deep processes and emotions. So when you get this kind of intimacy within yourself and you know how are you operating, only then you can really approach the other side and see what's going there around them. So basically I see the part of building this harmony around groups as a dual process in which you develop some inner coherence about knowing what's going on within me, recognizing what's going on within me, and then from this inner coherence to this interpersonal harmony, that it's a group of people that are in harmony with themselves through intimacy, they open up and they share this harmonious relationship they have with themselves. Mm. And that creates a group of people that are deeply integrated and open, and with this basis of mutual trust and respect, enables them to have difficult conversation, to listen to each other and to learn from each other, to be genuinely curious about the different perspective.
Mm. Very well said. Thank you. My next question, Gil, is for you. And this is for a lot of our young viewers and listeners. You know, you were certified as a non-flict peacemaker. Can you elaborate on the concept of non-flict and how can it be applied in everyday peacemaking, you know, including relationships?
Yeah, it's a good question. We basically want to bring it eventually to practice, and how do we use it in all areas of life? And what's beautiful around our work is that we can work with individuals, with executives, with families, with companies. It's all about human relationship. And the first stage of this non-flict process is to deeply understand the other's perspective, the other side. So active listening, we ask each other, what is your view on the conflict? And before we put our perspective on the table, we only use mirroring. So the first step that we teach people is to actively listen. We use mindfulness, we use presencing techniques, how I really, sort of like in mindfulness practices, we are focusing on our breath or on something. There's like something that's present that we move our attention towards it. So we teach people how to meditate on the speaker in front of you. As I listen to you speak, I deeply meditate and I see, what are you really saying? Not just the words that you use, your body language, your tone of voice. And I'm really trying, and then a thought comes, maybe something from my own perspective, maybe I need to eat lunch, something pops in my mind, and I recognize that I'm not being swept away, and I go back to you. What are you saying? What's your point of view? And when we bring this perspective, and that's just the first step, the first question of non-flict, to understand each other, something completely changed in the energy of the room, where people, they feel comfortable to speak with each other. And then we started to go on to a more concrete aspect of, what's the worst case scenario? How do we drive change? Where do we want to be? We need to envision a place for the future. What's the strategy to get there? And that's the whole funnel of the process.
Well said. Yeah. Great response. Thank you. And, you know, Amir, you've got a book which is titled Non-Flict, The Art of Everyday Peacemaking. Gil has just told me a lot about non-flict. Is there anything extra that you want to add from your book on non-flict?
Well, you and I have been talking about the application of non-flict for conflict resolution, but there's also the application of non-flict for coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So the questions that are outlined in this flow of a three-step process that has seven questions allow people to truly narrow down from the broader scope of understanding what the issue is all the way down to a plan of action. And so in management, for instance, we might see situations where somebody comes to your office with a problem and you say, do me a favor, step outside, take 10, 15 minutes, answer these questions, come back into the room and tell me what you think is your best and second best solution to the problem. And by using this, you activate actually people's owning their challenges and coming up with their own solutions rather than asking the leader to solve their problem in the organization, which sometimes leaders tend to fall into that trap and do so. So, and of course, the other two applications in business is in problem solving within a group. So we have seen that problems that in the past required 3 months to work on could actually process within an hour and a half, just like we do in a forum, in a quick presentation, and get some really good straw man solution for the problem. And lastly, and again, this is the most critical thing, is the application of forum in families. Having non-flict as a way to either resolve conflicts, and there's no family that doesn't have conflicts, but also establish a protocol for a conversation of how do we deal with issues.
Well said. Your focus is also on an interesting phrase that I picked up, presence techniques. How do these presence techniques contribute to creating a better sense of self in a conflict resolution?
I think that it really connects to the point that I mentioned earlier around how using presence in techniques as a way to deeply understand the other side. Because if I'm, well, a family member or my colleague or my boss is speaking with me, and I'm thinking about my point of view, and every sentence that they're saying, I'm only framing it. Is it right or wrong? Is it aligned with my perspective or not aligned with my perspective? What's my view? And I'm constantly thinking about that. I'm not present. And this state of mind is deeply affecting the interaction. We all see that. We all feel that if we speak with someone and you feel like they might be looking at you, but they're not. You can feel the energy, the frequency that they send out. How is it? Are they with me? And by using meditation and breath work, we can both focus and get into a position that we are not just standing next to each other, but we're integrated in the same energy, that we really can create something stronger together. So it's like a prerequisite. Every session that we go and we teach, we start with meditation, with breath work, with learning to modulate our own system to foster a culture of conflict resolution, of peacemaking, of mutual trust and respect. It's a deep prerequisite.
Very interesting.
Just add a sentence to this. My PhD work is on the power of being present. Mm-hmm. I took the work of Osho in his book, Returning to the Source.
Right.
And I understood from that there is something that we do that makes us anchor in the moment, which gives us tremendous power. I decided to train salespeople on how to be in the moment through, first before the interaction, preparing themselves through visualization of the end result, presencing through breath, empowering through relevant and raising their energy, called the radio model. And then during the interaction, and here's the critical point, through eye contact and active listening, identifying the unique buying reason. So if you're coming and you want to buy a vacuum cleaner, I need to understand what you need in that and what emphasis I should put, because I don't want to talk about all the possible features.
Right.
Presencing is actually understanding the unique need that you have. In sales, it's the unique buying reasons. In a counter argument or a political resolution, it is about what is really important for you. Because at the end of the day, we need to create together, co-create a solution that answers the need of both sides. For that, requiring tremendous listening of the unique, specific need that you have through that.
Very interesting. Thank you. And my next question is back to you, Amir, which is, as the founding moderator of the YPO Peace Action Network, what strategies have you found effective in fostering dialogue between seemingly opposing groups?
It's very important to get educated on the narrative of the other side. Mm-hmm. If you really want to understand where someone is coming from, where they're coming from could be a very long history of what has happened to the culture and the ancestors that come to the table to have this dialogue. So really getting the point of view of what is the identity question, the core narrative, the historical pain, right? Jewish people have a history of feeling prosecuted or being actually prosecuted for thousands of years for being a minority that is not seeking to actually recruit people in and so is standing out, had many reasons why we feel paranoid, why we feel when we see a threat to be a very existential threat. What that has given us is an asset, because we've learned through that, you know, the saying, only the paranoid survive, to develop the mechanisms that help us. Look at another side in a conflict, right? If you look at the conflict we had between the Turks and the Armenians, you need to understand the narratives of the Armenian and their story in this thing. But you also need to understand the narrative of the Turks, that for them to say that their ancestors committed genocide is an unacceptable statement because it reflects something about them. So really a core exercise is doing that. And the best way to manifest this, as we've done before, is I ask one side to actually role play the other side, the counter side of the conflict. And this is a beautiful way for me to tell you, hey, brother, I understand you. I know your story in detail. Let me tell you. And when I've seen that in action, our jaws dropped because all of a sudden we realized we're in the presence of both very intelligent people, but also extremely aware. From there begins a deep sense of respect to really go deep in the dialogue.
Well said. So I have time for two more questions. And my next question is to both of you. Amir, you co-founded 1 Million Peacemakers, and Gil, you're part of this 1 Million Peacemakers program. Could you, both of you, you know, from your own individual perspectives, Babe, give me the shared vision behind this initiative and its role in promoting conflict on a global scale?
I think that there's an end goal, a practical goal, which I think it's a beautiful approach to building a nonprofit organization. And saying our vision is reaching 1 million peacemakers, and it's self-explanatory through the name, but it really is the kind of like higher goal of this organization, and through conflict. So it is teaching, and what our partners there are doing is that they're facilitating multiple workshops and teach people around the world on conflict, or how could you solve conflicts in different ways. What's our, you know, we can flee from conflict, or we can fall, or we can find some way to compromise, and then they teach the alternative solution, and we teach people how to bring conflict around. And the goal of incorporating this organization was to bring peace to the world by teaching million people how to solve conflicts. And not a while ago, the youth initiative of this movement began, and because coming from the understanding that it all starts from the bottom, and education has a significant role in it, and the millennials have a more approach towards, if it's economic and it's social and SDGs or awareness to peace or awareness, and like that's their buying reason, that's their importance. So bringing more youth around the world to educate them, and it's basically also to give an alternative, because we have many other, now we see it now, you know, war, it's some kind of an expression of a conflict that has not been resolved, and we want to educate and teach youth and to reach a million people around the world. What's the alternative? Okay, we don't want to do something destructive. How do we really make it constructive? How do we really leverage diversity, learn from each other, and create something new, co-create something new through different perspectives? And that's the vision of the group.
Well said. Thank you. Amir, any thoughts from you?
Yeah, I think we just came back from Rwanda, where we've signed with the government an agreement to train 1 million kids how to be peacemakers. The 1 million people that were killed in the genocide between the different segments of the society. And I think that is the mission. We started it actually in a large scale in India, as you know, with the work that we've done with Tanishka. Where we trained 145,000 women who came together to resolve the conflicts in their life, but also to resolve conflicts in society and to engage with that. And in doing so, both be peacemakers for their own life, but also to the society around them. And you don't have to have a war to be a peacemaker. You can deal with the issues of local violence in a neighborhood, taking care of the poor. So actually, everything that the movement of the Peace Action Network and YPO started with, still a vital agenda, not only in conflicting wars, but in every aspect of people's life. And so 1 million is only the beginning. My partner keeps saying that he already registered the 1 billion as a target. So
And, you know, I would say even 1 billion is only 1 in 8 people. So even there, you've got a long way to go. But my last question to you both, Amir and Gil, in an increasingly divisive world, What do you envision as the future of conflict resolution and peacemaking?
That's a tough question.
I have a thought about, like, maybe a small, I don't know if it's a device or a perspective. Something that would highly benefit a world that is going towards polarization and conflictual environments is just to add a question mark at the end of a sentence. You know, replace the exclamation mark with a question mark.
Yeah.
And also maybe there's another look at it, that there's a lot of philosophers that are speaking. A lot of philosophers that are speaking around how every being, every entity has a masculine energy and a feminine energy. And I think it's about something that brings, we see it in countries that are ruled by women. This is very interesting.
Correct. And I agree with you.
Scandinavia and New Zealand, and how they manage things, because bringing something that is more round, more feminine, more wholesome, rather than only being attached to our sharp, masculine know-all perspective, we don't grow when we know everything. When there's certainty, there's lack of growth, and growth and interconnectivity comes from, first and foremost, from the doubt, from the uncertainty, from the question mark. So being in a question oriented, I'm not sure if what I'm saying makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense. I completely agree with what you're saying, Gil. If you get more women in leadership, certainly in nations, their perspective in resolving a lot of these conflicts will be what in the corporate world we keep saying, out of the box thinking.
Yeah,
I completely agree with you, but I'm going to give the last word to your dad.
Yeah, let me add just one point.
Please, go ahead.
Because this was a great explanation around that. Yeah. So what I just did, I said after I shared my view on that, and then I added, I'm not sure if what I'm saying makes sense. Let me know what you feel. And you resonated back to me that it does make sense. This was a beautiful example of what I just said. I'm coming with my attitude. I know stuff. I read the books, and my career has this experience. But then I add this question mark. Let me know if I'm getting this right. I'm not sure. And I'm being a bit more humble in that. And that creates this. So that was a good example.
Well said. Well said. Thank you.
In the spirit of humbleness, I think Gil gave such a beautiful answer. I think his words need to be the last words.
Well said. Thank you. And on that note, Gil and Amir, you've really taken me through some amazing thoughts on conflict. You know, what came out so strongly was how important trust, communication, understanding the other person's perspective, sitting down and listen to other people speak. You know, you spoke to me about the Peace Action Network. You spoke about the million peacemakers and hopefully a billion peacemakers sooner than later. Thank you, Gil, for a lot of your very interesting young perspectives that I was delighted to have. Thank you, Amir, for, as always, being such an amazing conversationalist and bringing in such amazing depth into everything you say. Thank you for speaking to me, both of you, and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.